T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And Greg Rebay.
Let's go, let's get it on. Oh, Peters!
Hey, got a fake Thornton and Rebay are exchanging punches.
And everybody pairing up at center. And now Peters starts teeing off on Emery.
The captain strikes gold.
And now, the Instigators.
Duffer's got the wheel of death going on his Mac over there.
It's not even the wheel of death. Ed's black.
But that's okay, though. You got a computer in that head of yours, so
we're gonna
tap into that today. Brian Duff back in studio. Computer back up and running?
Almost.
Okay, almost. Yeah. Marty Buron here for his usual Tuesday duties. Appreciate you guys filling in for Riv.
Hey, listen.
On air pronunciations.
Listen.
Rope hints.
Rope. There you go.
They say rope.
There it is.
The NHL pronunciation is rope.
No.
Yeah. As I'm spitting all over here.
It's rope hints, and it's going to stay that way. A couple things I need to get to before we get into last night. 10 years ago today.
Yes.
Who doesn't love a little flashback of hockey history? Now, Duffer, you are a hockey historian, okay? 10 years ago today, this is from PGH Sports History. I have no clue who that is. I have to assume that's...
Pittsburgh Sports History.
Pittsburgh, that's what I was going to say. 10 years ago, 4309, if you can't do the math. Buron, hashtag Flyers, blank the hashtag Penguins. 3-0. Penn series edge cut to 3-2. Let's go, Pens.
You know what happened that year?
Nice picture of you right there. Stopping.
Penguins won the cup.
Pittsburgh Penguins won the cup.
Oh, you spoiled the suspense for me.
Bylsma's...
you asked what happened.
Bylsma was the interim coach with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And we were down 3-1 in the series and had no life. And I always, always struggled in the old Mellon Arena.
Who didn't?
The igloo in Pittsburgh. That was my first ever NHL game. And I got lit up that night. And it never stopped for the rest of my career.
Is that the night Razor said something?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, no. That wasn't my first NHL game. But there was a few
so
years
later. So you
really
didn't play well in the Mellon Arena.
I hated the
so
igloo.
So it's like it's tough to win sometimes. But you just actually got peppered over
No,
there.
That was my worst. Probably one of my worst building
Keep
in
going.
My career. So we go in. And we get outshot like 15-5, I think, in the first period. And I was an absolute brick wall. Mm. And it felt good. And, you know, you got Malkin and Crosby, and those guys are all, like, searching for answer. We win 3-0. So we're thinking, man, we're going back home for game 6. We win at home. We're coming in this building game 7. We've got them. Mm-hmm. They beat us in the conference finals the year before. So we're thinking, we're making this huge comeback. We go home. We're up 2-0. Things are going well. About 7-8 minutes left in the second period. Maxim Talbot was running his mouth on the ice for Pittsburgh, and he was trying to pick a fight. PD, you know the role. You're up 2-0.
Max Talbot would never talk to me.
Well, that's true. But if somebody was to talk to you,
just saying.
You're up 2-0, you don't even give him the time of day, right? So
well, I don't know. We just had this conversation about mental toughness stuff, right?
Dan Carcillo
odds
decides.
Odds are, Marty, to your point, no. The odds are you leave him alone.
Dan Carcillo decides, I'm going to fight Max Talbot because I'm going to be a hero.
Oh, boy.
And he goes to fight him, and he doesn't really do well. The crowd in Philly is kind of booing Talbot, and Talbot gives him the old shh with the finger in front of his mouth. Like, mm-hmm. He shushes the crowd.
Ooh.
And then they scored not too long after that, make it 2-1. They scored at the start of the third period, 2-2, 3-2. We lose 4-2. Enjoy the summer, boys. And then the next year, we
went.
Like
the Craig Byrne, eh, Marty?
Just like the Craig Byrne. Yeah, go to Craig Byrne and hit the golf balls. The next year, I went to Pittsburgh at the end of the season or whatnot, and we went to a Pirates game. And there's, you know, how you walk on the bridge to go to PNC Park in Pittsburgh? There was guys selling T-shirts of the face of Max Talbot with the shush, like right there. That became a pretty big moment in them winning that cup.
Well, Max Talbot was the hero in Game 7 that year when won the cup. So that was hit. So that you're talking conference final?
No, I'm talking that was the first round.
It was first round. Okay, so the when did Pittsburgh Philly not play? Was it the next year when Philly beat Pittsburgh to because Philly went to the final the next year in 2010.
Yes.
And I'm thinking
that's the year Fleury and nobody could stop a puck, right?
I think so. Yeah.
That's the it was like 7-5 every game.
Yeah, was that the one where they had brawls every game? There was one where it took like 2 hours to play the first period. I don't know if you remember. I don't know if it was 2011-12 maybe. Mm-hmm. Might have been 2012 playoffs, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Crosby fought Giroux.
Was Couturier involved? Was that not Couturier?
They were all involved.
As far as I remember, he was
shutting. So they didn't play. Philly and Pittsburgh did not play in the 2010 playoffs. So that has to be later.
Okay.
Because Philly and Montreal were in the conference finals, and then they lost to Chicago.
Let's throw that picture back up there, Marty. We'll tweet this out, too, so you can follow the show at the Instigators. Marty will retweet it. He's at Marty Biron 43. Duffer will get in there. He's at... At Duffer Sabres.
We.
At Duffer Sabres. It looks like you're looking behind you. Did you think that one squeaked by a little bit?
No, look, I was a big goalie. Look at the size of like my jersey, my pants, my gear. Like I was a big goalie, and there was just no room to shoot. So the guy missed the net, and I was just making sure the
puck definitely going wide.
It's going wide.
Yeah, that's definitely going. So he took that shot from the left side. And that was all the way back. You can see the Versus logo back in the day. So that was when hockey was booming on TV.
It was after
Outdoor
OLN.
Network, boys.
OLN. Hey, Outdoor OLN. Life Network.
You'd have been hard-pressed to find the game Marty's talking about on American television.
Did you catch that game last night between the fishing derby and the...
the dog hunting contest.
And the dog show? Yeah, there was a hockey game on there on the OLN, Outdoor Network. Game was indoors. Okay, listen. Lots that happened yesterday. Duffer 2-for-2 on the predictions yesterday. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We don't give things away for victories like that. We call those moral victories.
I got a coffee. I'm good.
Speaking of coffees, look at that. Does that might look like my cream might have been not too good, eh?
Yeah, it's a little
buy, sell, trade. You would drink that.
Buy, sell, trade. I would not.
You would
I don't
not?
Drink All coffee, right. and I would not.
If I'm gone for the second hour, it's the cream, boys. I can
Duffer
tell you.
Will always.
No, we'll just push Marty that way.
Hey, it's the cream. All right, 2-for-2. We got another game 7.
Yeah, I was not surprised by Carolina, even though they trailed twice. Obviously, the statistics in this series have shown the home team to be dominant every single time, although it didn't come without some controversy and an opportunity for the Capitals where they thought they had it evened up in the third, only to have it go against them. I was less sure, I think, about Dallas as that game wore on, simply because Rene looked like he might actually be able to steal one for the Predators. Especially when he stopped Jamie Benn in overtime on that pass across, I thought, "Wow, this." And then you factor in all the missed opportunities.
Well, when Nashville hit the crossbar with
the
like 5 minutes,
the 2-on-0 breakaway. Oh my gosh! And I hate saying this, but he should have passed it.
Okay,
that was the only way. Ben Bishop to me is the only goaltender I watch in the NHL right now where I think you're not going to score on this guy.
They weren't last night.
So you have to do something different. And when are you ever going to get presented with a 2-on-0 to perhaps get him guessing one way or the other? It was Sissons, was it not, that had the breakaway and was stopped?
Yes, it was Sissons. But remember a few years back, there was a guy in St. Louis that watched a St. Louis Blues for the first time, and he quote tweeted the whole game, and he was amazed by how. Like the speed of the game and the guys fighting. And Soul City and on Twitter, Tony X. So last night, he's watching this Nashville Dallas game. And I think his tweet was, and I'm trying to find it again, it was something to the effect that he goes, I would never put up a soft move on a breakaway ever. Because that was Olli Jokinen in. The shootout against the New York Rangers and the Flyers to get in the playoffs. He tried to do the little backhand 5-0. Brian Boucher stopped him. There was one where I think it was one of the Sedins came in one year and tried that soft backhand, you know,
and just
5-0 and
pads,
dumped it in the pad. Yeah. And so you're 1-1. It's the third period. You've got a breakaway. How about you just shoot the puck as hard as you can through the goalie? Try to beat him through it. Now that little soft move backhand, like, that's a skilled play. And I could see if, you know, Sidney Crosby comes in and does it, or Patrick Kane does it, but not Colton Sissons.
Yeah. And then how about the Kyle Turris chance as well?
The two on, he just missed low blocker,
well,
right?
Well, yes, but it was also emblematic of his season the Predators season. Like, Turris simply couldn't get anything going this year offensively. And unfortunately for Nashville, he's gifted one of the best looks that they had. Yeah. Now, they did hit the crossbar on that wide open one. Was that Yarncroke?
Bishop was laying all over the place. A stick was flying in the air.
Yeah.
He's rolling. There's a 6'7" goalie that's trying to roll around on the ice, and the building is shaking, and it was a really, really cool. And you watch that whole game, the first 40 minutes, not much going
not
on.
Much, no.
The last 20, were on the edge of your seat the whole time. And
yeah, I thought overtime was terrific too.
And I got to give it, you know, after Klingberg scored, like, there's the coaching staff and Jim Montgomery, and that's a big, big win for Jim Montgomery and the
Rick
Dallas
Bonus.
Stars. Rick Bonus, Stu Barnes. Mm-hmm. I saw Stu Barnes so many times on the bench. I think that Jim Montgomery relies on his expertise, his experience
Absolutely.
With the organization, because he would always go over to Stu Barnes and talk to him. And Stewie, looking like he's still 25 years old, the guy is not aged a day.
Says is forever 29 Marty.
Well, yeah, and 36 Petey.
Well, if you're 29 and I'm 36, how is that better?
Well, no, because JJ.
It would have been nice
something.
If you said 28, but that's okay. Carry on, Marty.
Well, yeah, so Stu Barnes, just an awesome, awesome job with Dallas and, you know, helping the coaching staff. And so that was a big
honestly,
win.
Honestly, I mean, when you I don't – you guys have lived it, so you know and can articulate the value of an assistant coach better, but we were all at the draft in Dallas last year when – Montgomery was being hired, and the talk was Rick Bonus.
We were there.
I know
too.
That's what I'm saying. And Rick Bonus was being interviewed and ultimately hired as an assistant. And again, I would say it's still for some maybe a little known fact that no one has coached more games in the NHL as an assistant coach than Rick Bonus.
Oh, Rick Bonus.
So where was he before?
He
was the head coach,
Ottawa.
The very first head coach of the Ottawa Senators. Where was he before that? Do we know?
What, who? Rick
Bonus?
Bonus.
Before?
Oh, he was in Tampa Bay before Dallas. He was in Vancouver.
No, but Marty's
he was in...
going back to the beginning.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He started coaching.
Winnipeg.
Oh, was it Winnipeg before Ottawa?
Yeah. Winnipeg before Ottawa.
Yeah.
Okay, so
and then before
his...
the Islanders, before he had that, he was put in that mess of a situation with the Islanders.
My point is I loved how you just said Montgomery, from your vantage point, seems to really lean on Stu. And I do think that Bonus was the perfect fit. I mean, Jim's an easy to get along with guy, but he kind of plays it really coach-like, straight-like. He doesn't give you much in-game, right? Like, you can see his demeanor is what it is. And I think Rick is the perfect foil for that. And therefore, I'm not really surprised that they've been able to kind of outgrow some of the problems that they went through during the course of the season and now are finding their way. Because you have to manage people a little differently, and I think they have a nice mix of people to do just
what,
that.
What ended up costing the Nashville Predators? Like,
their
power play. Oh my gosh!
How can you be like the worst in the regular season and not spend all your time making sure that that's not the thing that lets you down in the
fire, Laviolette?
Well, maybe, but their power play. So
well, you know why I say that. So so he's available to come here.
Do you think he wants to rent my house? For those that didn't listen yesterday,
we didn't hear that story yesterday. Marty and Lavi go way back to a house rental that Marty.
So the power play.
Come on, but go on.
The power play for Nashville, awful, awful. And then Blake Como gets called for a tripping penalty. It was true-ish. It was sneaky, but it could have been let go. Jim Montgomery is on the bench, and he's yelling at the ref. That is bleeping embarrassing. Uh-huh. That is it. And you can read his lips.
And you know how bad it was? NBC didn't even want to stay on him. Oh. They had to keep cutting away, and then they try to give you
and
a sense of what his emotions were, but they're like, we better not stay on this guy because the words coming out are so bad. Yeah. So, but again... So you're thinking, as we talked about the night before, oh my gosh, Joe Thornton's career could end here on a penalty kill and, you know, it's all over. there was never a doubt.
No.
Like, there was nothing from Nashville on that power play. Like, if anything, it inspired Dallas, to just get to overtime and just win the game.
Absolutely. But so you have Jim Montgomery mouthing some words after this. You had Alex Ovechkin, where the camera was right on him, mouthing some word. My son, who we're driving back from the goalie session at the academy last night, and he goes, "Dad, I guess the camera was on Ovechkin." And he said, "This is bleeping Oars bleep." It was like, yeah. What the heck is happening here? It was like, it was just just.
And how, and being a father, how does that make you feel? Because, and I was asking, I was asking the guys before, like, this is your role model, right? This is your captain of your team, Petey. Your superstar player that kids will emulate, unfortunately, in some circumstances.
It is your job as a parent to be able to guide him in the right direction. My son was in an NHL locker room from the age of like 2, walking around. Mm-hmm. And guys are talking in an NHL locker room, and it is cursing left and right.
You can blame Razor for
and
that.
And yes, I can blame Razor and a lot of other guys. And then they'd always be like, "Oh, sorry, Marty, we'll try to clean up." I'm like, "No, you know, this is our locker room. He understands and he knows, and he was 3, 4, 5, whatever. The words that are being used in the locker room are not to being used anywhere else. That is how you almost appreciate what a locker room is and what a special place it is."
I was that guy. You didn't have kids when we played on the same team together, but I was that guy that was like, "Sorry, man." Sitting across the room, the guy's like, "Really? Come on.
Jacob was like maybe a year or two. He didn't come in the locker room, but when he was 4 or 5 in Philadelphia, Jacob used to walk up, and 1 year he walked to Riley Cote. Riley Cote was our tough guy, and he was big. And he's like literally 4 years old. He walks up to Riley Cote and he says, "Hey, Cote, why don't you score a goal once in a while?" Like, you know, and Rouse is like, "Well, that's not my job. My job is to be like an enforcer." And he goes, "I know, but you can shoot. You can shoot and score." And so Rouse is like, "Who the heck is this kid?" Like, it just, but it was funny because he was part of the group, right?
Sure.
And guys didn't, like, made him part of the group. I talk about Kasperi Kapanen, who's with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Kasperi Kapanen was maybe 8 or 9 years old when I played in, well, maybe a little older, maybe 10, 12, whatever, when I played with his dad, Sammy, in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And the kid was in the locker room playing mini stick in the locker room. And so some of our young guys would be playing mini sticks with him.
Yeah.
He grew up in this culture, and it is a great place if it's geared the right direction for kids to go. So anyway, so
I loved having kids in the room. It was always
the Briers used to have the three kids
come in.
Like,
yep.
The Fitzpatrick used to like these.
Fitzpatrick's had a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
Ever since like when you start in the minors, I mean, you have guys coming, you know, bringing their kids to the rink.
Cunnyworth used to have his two
Todd
kids.
Todd Nelson used to bring his kids.
Cam
Doug
and
Huda,
Craig were Cunny's
Chris
kids.
Chris Taylor's kids, coach in Rochester. Let's talk about last night. You were talking about, well, first the breakaway. What, you know, why did Kuznetsov, was it Kuznetsov?
Oh,
like, where's he going? Where's
he going? He's going and for then, the wraparound.
And then Ovi, you know, jamming at the puck, no goal. What's up with that?
Well, there was a little bit of controversy out there because if you watched it on NBC, they are showing the replay. And while they're showing the replay, the referee went to his microphone and announced that there was no goal on the play. The puck was under the goalie's pad, and he was shoved into the net. So that's what the call on the ice was. But if you're watching on NBC, you have no idea what the call is. And then they will go to commercial break because it was that time. They come back. The referee announced, after a video review, the call on the ice stands. We have no goal. Nobody knows, if you're watching on NBC, what's happened. I was listening to it on the radio coming back from the academy. So I had the Fox Carolina feed on with
Forslund
and Trip Tracy. And they had the referee announce to the crowd and to their viewers that there was no goal originally because the goalie had the puck and it was pushed in. So it was clear as day to me when I saw the replay that it was no goal, that the referee saw exactly like that. Now, Ovechkin doesn't shove Mrazek into the net, but the action of pushing it under his pads makes Mrazek flip over a little bit and the puck squirts loose. Mm-hmm. It is no goal. It's very clear that that wasn't a goal. I know Washington is mad at that moment. Ovechkin plays with so much emotion, but it was It was clear as day. There was no goal right there.
Is that what you saw, Duffer?
I didn't see it as definitively, only because I'm not sure. Was there ever a truly great angle that showed the puck under his pad? Like, I felt like there was a lot of guessing going on, so I felt like Ovechkin was entitled to dig for the puck. But upon it being waved off, having seen this almost a million times now in our lifetime, I wasn't surprised what the referees were thinking. I just would have liked, like most viewers, a proper explanation from the official and or the broadcast. So it left you wondering if there was something beyond what I had originally seen, which was kind of that pitchfork motion. So, and again, I would have liked to have seen whether Ovechkin saw a little daylight under there, saw a loose puck, saw something different than what the camera angles presented to us. But at the end of the day, not really surprised that it was waved off. But again, boy, oh boy, that's a quick play, you know. It didn't go the Caps way.
Yeah, so. Ovi, you gotta give it. Ovi you starts get... to lose his marbles a little bit. What were you gonna say?
Well, he had a night. But like right from the start, I mean, the whole like when he missed on the Dougie Hamilton hit and did this as he skated Chicken. Away from him, and then when he scored the goal and the little hop step in his celebration, like. Ovi was absolutely feeling it last night and was expecting.
What, could it have been a distraction?
I don't think so. I think, no, because let's be honest here. Like, the home team has dominated in this series. I thought Ovechkin was helping carry this team to a couple of leads. Yep. The Capitals were in a good place. It was a good road game for Washington last night for the most part compared to what we had seen previously in the series. So, no, I think if anything, he was bringing the guys along with the energy that he had.
But who made the whole thing happen? Who would... if you're looking at Carolina and you say, who's the one guy that's going to make a difference in that game? Who would that have been?
Well, probably the guy that got it done.
Williams?
Justin Williams.
The elimination sensation himself.
Yeah, he was feeling
it. He's Mr. Game 7.
Except for the last time, but yeah.
You know, except for the last time. But
he second all-time points in elimination games.
To Patrick Kane, right? Yeah. This is amazing.
But most in Game 7s, which is now what he's walking into.
Which, I mean, the expectations are everybody's going to be Mr. Seven.
Well, no,
Justin
Williams. Don't you realistically just, you know, give Carolina 2-0 on the board? I mean, just with the statistics and history itself?
No.
Okay, I think it was a joke. It was a joke.
I think to the point that you made yesterday, and it ultimately didn't come to fruition, but the Capitals have been very good in recent memory in closing out teams.
Yes.
Didn't happen last night.
They were 4-4 last year.
I don't think last night causes them any grave concerns. I mean, they are what they are. I think they'll be home and in a good position to win.
The only concern that causes Washington, really, I think Washington wins that series.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is now when you have the Islanders that won in 4, you have Columbus that won in 4, and you're the Washington Capitals, and you're going to stretch yourself to 7, and you are I've lived it. With the New York Rangers, we could never close out a series. We would be up, 3-2, lose game 6. We'd be up 3-1, lose game 5 and 6. I was on the bench. Blame Hank. Blame me. Blame Lundqvist. See?
Let me throw this out there before we go to break. Chandler Stephenson, just a dirty play late in the game.
Yeah.
And
like comparative to the Dallas one that was allegedly thought of as a slew foot, right? That was
This was gutless.
Brutal.
This was gutless.
Yeah.
And, I don't want to be the guy and be all drastic and say I think the league needs to take a look at this, but I'm going to be the guy that says the league needs to take a look at this because that guy hits his head on the ice.
Right.
There's no difference between that being a headshot with an elbow to the chin or a headshot due to a dirty, gutless play by a guy that, I'm not going to say shouldn't be in the league. He's a very effective player, but a guy that should not be doing crap like that.
One game suspension.
100% agree.
100%.
At least.
But make it now game 7. Like, that to me is sending the right message.
Yeah.
And it's easy for them. It's Chandler Stephenson.
Yeah, it's not.
That's the point here.
It's not Ovi going out there and slew-footing somebody and you say, oh, man, do we have to to suspend Ovi for game seven.
He got, he knew exactly what he was doing. He got his knee behind his knee. He got his toe behind his heel. And he lifted that. He pulled his foot right from the back.
Guys used to do that, and it's dangerous because
and pushed.
You would pull the body back as you slew foot underneath, so it's a double negative, and it just makes – you can't, as the player force. Receiving it, you can't control yourself, and you go fully – like down hard on the ice.
It's and he did. And he's lucky that when he went down, he kept his head up because, you know, and I'm trouble pronouncing that kid's name, but he gets slew footed and he goes back and lands on it, you know, almost like his tailbone. And he goes, and you think like he came close to his head hitting the ice.
No, absolutely.
You know, but anyway, I doubt they will though. Can I say that? Like, and I'll be disappointed.
Right. Was it Mantalainen? Was it
yes,
him?
Yeah. Number eight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt they will. And it will be, you know, I'll say this first, and I always feel like you have to pump something up before you absolutely knock it down because that's the way we have to do it. But I give George Parros a lot of credit for a lot of things that he's done with cleaning up the game and the Department of Player Safety with decisions throughout the last couple years. Mm-hmm. But you could potentially miss the boat on something here. I mean, I really do. And you want to talk about sending a message? I thought they missed it with the Foegele hit.
Uh-huh.
But they absolutely missed it with the Foegele hit, and they could have sent a message there with Anoshi. And I feel like if they don't do something about this, you know, how many players are going to get hurt in this series before they say, you know, like we did enough to make sure that our players stayed healthy.
Valid points. Absolutely.
All right. On that, we'll go to break. You guys will make some valid points for a little game we're going to play. The reason they win or the reason they lose. A lot of pressure on the goaltenders, I think. We'll talk about that when we return. A couple game sevens tonight. Looking forward to that. Who are we rooting for? You might be surprised to hear. WGR 550 and MSG, the Instigators. We'll be right back.
We're back with more of the Instigators. With Andrew Peters and Craig Rabe.
All right, welcome back. Brian Duff in for Marty on Tuesday. Marty in for Craig. Just shuffling over.
Yep, pretty much.
See, you're in Marty's Tuesday seat, Duffer.
I know.
You got to come up with some dis or dats. You're in charge of that.
Oh. Yeah, dis or dad, Duffer.
I'm putting some in the rundown right now, and I've got a couple good ones, but you got
to. Is it an hour from now?
It's 11:30.
Okay, good.
You think you could come up with a couple? Music, movie, hockey history.
I'm guessing I don't have a choice, Petey, so it's on me now.
There it is. The reason they win, the reason they lose. Who is it going to be on in those games, good or bad? Will Frederik Andersen be the reason the Leafs win or the reason they lose? Who wants to go first? I guess, Marty, you can go first.
I will tell you this. It'll be neither or. He will not be the reason for win or loss. He's been good. He's been steady. He's actually been better in the Toronto losses. Mm-hmm. He's been more spectacular. But if the Leafs win or lose Game 7, it will not be because Freddie Anderson will make him win or Freddie Anderson will make him lose. It has to come down to Tavares, Marner, Matthews, probably shut down a pair of Zaitsev and Muzzin. So I'm saying neither. Because that's not a this or that, so I can pick neither.
You can pick neither.
I cannot. I can't.
Yeah. Okay, no, you absolutely can. And if you notice in the background, we have some nice little
what is that?
Game show music. Right?
Makes me
Duffer, your favorite team,
oh, he's
the
not
Leafs.
Plugged in.
Oh, yeah, you're not plugged in. Well, we can hear some.
I'm always
like,
hearing game show music, really.
Okay.
Kind of the soundtrack to my life.
Something you hear at Club Med in Mexico.
Yeah.
That is something you would hear at a Club Med in Mexico.
And the
right
surfboard
now.
Challenge.
OLN.
Oh. Always comes back to it. Yes, Frederik Andersen could be the reason. Or is it will be? Oh, will.
Will be.
If the Leafs win, Frederik Andersen will be the reason they win,
ooh,
in my opinion.
That's a statement.
I don't believe he'll be the reason they lose.
Okay. Okay. PD?
I want to know who's going to win that game right now.
Oh, probably Toronto because they've won two in that building already.
Marty, do you care to chime in?
I mean, I picked Boston, but as soon as I picked Boston, I was like, I've been on Toronto all year, so.
I was going to have this or that about this game seven, and I decided to go in a different direction. But was it 2013? where the Leafs were up 4-1 in the third period and then let it slip. And then there's a fantastic YouTube video about these Leafs fans that watched that game in 2013. And they're like, I don't know why you would film yourself watching a hockey game, but it ended up being...
that was a campaign at the time.
For the NHL, you're right.
Videos. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
This was... it ended up brilliant because you see them, they're up 4-1. These guys are having fun. They're hanging out with their girlfriends and wives. And it's like everything is great. Then it becomes 4-2, and you're like, oh, okay, that's fine. 4-3, 4-4 tied, and then they go to OT, and it's 5-4. Some language on that YouTube video that you have to be careful with. But anyway, just a fantastic video. So they came down and crumbled in 2013. Last year, Game 7 against Boston, is the infamous Jake Gardner -5 in the game.
It happens,
but -5 is a big number in a game. So I have the feeling that Toronto's going to – somebody's going to have a bad night or something's going to happen that's going to cost Toronto the game again, and Boston will win.
You just ticked off a lot of people. There are a lot of Leaf fans
listening to our station.
Sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Not today.
Yes, today. Yeah? Especially today, because they want to know what we here in Buffalo
think of them.
Have to say about the Leafs and how badly we want to see them burn. Like it's my grandfather's fire in the backyard when he's burning leaves illegally.
Illegally?
It's illegal to burn leaves this time of year, sir. Well, I'm going to burn them anyway. So why don't you just... I want to see the Leafs go down tonight in a ball of fire. Will Tuukka Rask be the reason the Bruins win or the reason they lose?
I will say the exact same answer that I did with Freddie Anderson. Neither. Because Tuukka has given up a bad goal... here or there, but it hasn't been the reason why they have won or lost. Who is it that scored a bad goal? Matthews scored a bad goal the other day. The Bruins were up 2-0 in game 4. Matthews scores a goal. It's just a shot that goes right through his armpit, and it's 2-2 at that point. And then the next 2-3 shots are like scrambly. He gets them and they leak right next to him, but they still won the game. So I'm going to say neither. That Tuukka Rask, just like Freddie Anderson, will just be a passenger in this game 7 that is life and will not have a big saying in it.
No chance. He gets shell-shocked. I guarantee you the Leafs are going to... I picked Boston too, Duffer. Uh-huh. I picked Boston to win the cup.
Wow.
What? So my...
They're the cup winner right now that Tampa's gone?
I picked them before the playoffs.
You did?
To win the cup. When we said our cup prediction, I picked Boston, and they're going to lose tonight. The Leafs are going to win this hockey game.
Are you doing reverse psychology?
No, right now? I'm not. I'm not saying I'm going to be happy about it. I said they're going to win. Anyway, and it's going to be because of Tuukka Rask, because that's what's going to happen. Sorry, carry on, Duffer.
I'm going to go with... Jeez, I don't know what I'm going to go with. I don't think Rask is going to be a factor in this. I really think it comes down to Boston top line. If they dominate the way they're capable of, and going back to, as you said, 2013 when Bergeron was at the center of everything.
And James Reimer was at the center of everything, too.
I lean more towards that. So I don't believe Rask could be a factor in either way in this one tonight.
I'm with Don Cherry on one thing. I don't think that the Carolina Hurricanes are a bunch of jerks, but I think Freddie Anderson might be the best goalie in the world right now.
What?
Okay, carry on, Marty. The penalty kill will be the reason the Leafs win or the reason they lose. So,
That will be the reason they lose. That would be the reason they lose. Their penalty kill is the absolute worst. But it's funny because it's been... the absolute worst in Toronto, but it hasn't been as bad in Boston this playoff series. And I was doing some research on it and listening to the games, they seem to have said that the ice is worse in Boston. It's very choppy, puck is bouncing, and it's not very suitable for, you know, good passes. And so it may affect Boston more, the fact that the ice is a little bit in worse shape in Boston and help the penalty kill for the Leafs, but penalty kill with Toronto is atrocious, atrocious. And more importantly, they can't, you know, we've talked about that, the analytics all season, Duffer, in the pregame show, about denying zone entry, especially as a penalty killing unit. They are not denying anything. No, they don't deny the zone entry. They don't deny the backdoor pass. They don't deny the point shot. They don't deny the backdoor guy. They don't deny anything.
They don't deny that the penalty kill has been a huge problem.
Well, Mike Babcock says, oh, we'll be okay. We'll be fine. We'll work on it. We'll be fine.
Don't worry. I think there's pain coming.
There's pain coming. We'll be fine.
Penalty kill will be a reason that they lose. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. We agree. We're in agreement, Petey.
So now we're picking Boston then?
Yeah, no.
So basically what we're saying comes down to the least discipline tonight. They got to stay out of the penalty box.
How is that game going to be refed? Because they
have nothing to do with their discipline. It's how is it going to be called?
Well, tonight I think it's Kelly Sutherland and Wes McCauley, I think, are the two referees, two veterans referees. What do you think is going to happen? Nothing's going to get called.
Right.
Nothing.
Until?
Until somebody slew-foot somebody. But I'm just saying, it has actually been better for Boston. Has been all over the Leafs, grabbing, holding, hooking. It's been bad.
I'd agree with that. Right from game one, there was a shift in game one where there should have been an interference call right from the drop of the hat, and no interference call. And you're thinking like, uh-oh, if they're letting this go that early, then what happens?
Toronto's skilled. So it would benefit the Leafs if more penalties were being called, especially on Boston. So Boston is saying, hey, we're going to clutch and grab, and if you don't call penalties, we'll be all right with it. So,
well, you see, I think what Boston does, too, is they initiate contact. So they initiate the contact and make Toronto retaliate. And basically that's where it's almost like Nazem Kadri. You know, like, what was that? It was a retaliatory penalty that basically cost him the remainder of the first round. So, I mean, that's where I think Toronto get themselves into trouble and whether or not they can keep a cool head. What are you laughing at?
Well, Hockey12316 on Twitter says, hopefully the Leafs players have window wipers on their windshield because Marchand will be licking like a madman. So I'm asking this. Will Marchand lick will be a reason they win or a reason they lose tonight? Or will there be a Marchand lick?
It'll be a lick. It'll be right to the back of the net, though. He'll score tonight. Well, I need him to. He's in the office pool.
I think I have Pastrnak. Feed Pastrnak.
Yes, we have Pastrnak. Remember, we have almost.
Okay, good for you guys. But do you get more points
for
the goal? Our
brackets are not doing so well, Duffer.
I tried to tell you that after the first couple of nights of the playoffs.
I think we are. What is it? There's a 5-series win already. I think I have 2. Wins.
I'd like to tell you that I've conveniently forgotten my selections, so I'm not giving it any extra time at this point.
You're not even thinking about it?
Not thinking about it at all.
I did not have Dallas, so that's 1. I did not have the Islanders, that's 2. I didn't have Columbus, that's 3. Who else is through right now? Yeah, it said Dallas.
Colorado, Calgary.
I had St. Louis. I did not have Colorado, so that's 4 I didn't have. So out of the 5 teams that have advanced.
We both picked St. Louis to get to the final.
Yeah, I only have St. Louis. Out of the 5 teams that advanced, I only have St. Louis. So I'm 1-for-5 right now.
Well, that's great, Marty, but I didn't ask.
But I'm telling you. But that wasn't a question we were supposed to answer?
No, hey, you know what, man? You come up with your own questions. You know, we answer them. You know, that's what we do around here.
My head just spins.
What's that?
My head just spins.
Well, let me spin one more to you. Martin Jones, Marty. Will Martin Jones be the reason the Sharks win or the reason they lose?
If Martin Jones...
I'm sensing a trend with these questions.
Yeah, I'm saying...
Well, when you have the goalie guru...
I'm not saying neither, because I'm saying Martin Jones will be the reason the Sharks lose. He's been really good, but I'm telling you, he's been really good the last few games, but him... And if you are so inclined to read French, because there's an article right now on lnh.com.
Oh, yeah. Which is the French help me get there. Guide me there right now.
It's lnh.com. I just said this. I think it will be extremely hard for Martin Jones tonight in San Jose, because that fan base, as soon as he starts to have a squeaky puck go through him or one that he doesn't stop cleanly, they're going to be wooing and awing. And
the home fans are going to be on him?
Oh, absolutely.
No chance.
Yes.
No.
San Jose, their fans have been on him all year. And I think he would much prefer that game be on the road where he can just be relaxed and not have to worry about the pressure and the building closing in on him. That Shark Tank can be very intimidating, but it will close in on Martin Jones, and he will be a reason they lose.
He'll be a reason they win. He's 1-0 lifetime in Game 7s with a shutout of Nashville back in 2016. He is the hottest goaltender in this series. If the Sharks prevail, it will be because of Martin Jones.
That's great analysis by both of you. I don't know who to choose. I'm going to go with my heart. I'm taking Vegas.
So that's not the question.
It's not the question. But I don't know. I'm trying to think about who's going to win or who's going to lose, like based on your answers, because you both gave me two totally different answers, and I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know. I don't know who to believe. I got to say Martin Jones would be the reason that the Sharks win, but I don't think they're going to win. I don't think he's going to be the reason why they lose.
I hope you're right. I mean, I can't believe Vegas has put themselves in this position. When they were up 3-1, to me, it was the lock of the first round, where Vegas was at, how they played down the stretch, especially with the three guys that they added that were not a part of it last year, absolutely dominating. And now you're sitting there wondering, where's everybody else? And are they going to get it together? Now, yeah, they had a million chances in the last game and almost 120 shot attempts, but they have to find a way to score here, and it comes back to the Martin Jones question, and Jones has been really good, and that was not expected to be said after the first four games of this series.
Marty, one more time. Marty wrote an article in French, so where can they find it again if they care to read it in French?
LNH.com.
What's Esch? Esch. Is that Robert Esch's website?
It's yes.
NHL, but it's LNH.com.
LNH. Okay.
I just retweeted it, PD. Go read it.
But I know, but if someone's looking at it and they're going to type it in, they're not going to be like, what is Esch?
Esch. It's Esch.
Like,
not
you
Esch.
Know what Esch, Esch is. But Esch. Like, if I'm like LN
Esch.
Esch. ESH?
Can you do the ABC in French?
ESCHE.
PD. It's like Cody Haken.
Cody Eakin. Rupe.
It's at LNH.com. Go check it out.
Can you spell the alphabet? Can you say the alphabet in French?
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N,
O, P. You said
Ash.
Right.
You just said Ash.
Q, R, S, T, U, V.
No, there was no L.
U, A, V, W, X, Y, Z. Whatever the hell it is. You know what I say to that? Au revoir to this segment. And when we come back, we're going to be saying au revoir to a hockey team that got punted out of the playoffs last night. More Instigators coming up. We will remember you. Now you know the channel.
Hockey talk that hits. This is the Instigators with Andrew Peters and Craig Rabe.
No, Craig Rabe. Martin Biron and Brian Duff in studio with me today. Duff, are you come back tomorrow?
Yes,
perfect.
If you'll have
Duff,
me.
Duff, back tomorrow. That was an invite. Martin.
Yes.
At the break, you discovered something.
Well, we received an email from the Sabres public relations department.
Wait.
That says that Zach Bogosian has undergone a successful hip surgery, and recovery time is 5 to 6 months. So that is tough news. That is really tough news when you think of it, because 5 to 6 months puts his recovery time to about the middle of October, really, when you think about it. So that he may be in training camp, but that will be one of those where it would be on the early part of the 5 months recovery. So he's most likely to miss time in training camp, most likely to miss time in the regular season, and then have some of his load management situation early in the year when you come back from hip surgery. So that is a really, really tough blow to the Sabres decor.
We're seeing a lot of hip injuries. I mean, common with goaltenders, but I just feel like a lot of guys are, you know, torn labrums in their hip and everything like that. And
remember though, this is the second big surgery for him now in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Because in 17-18, he only played 18 games, shut it down to get fixed, and, you know, last year played in 65 games, which was a step in the right direction, and And one can only hope that this, too, is a further step in the direction to continue to improve what has been, you know, problematic for him, which is lower body injuries. I mean, the games played ledger for him has been hard for him and for those that are relying on him. Yeah. And, you know, you're also, you're talking about a player that's 28 years old, going into the final year of his contract, wanting to be as good as humanly possible. I'm, we were all hopeful coming out of the surgery last year that he could get back to that level. And I do think that, you know, while it was, again, an up and down season for the entire team, the one thing that you can really give Zach an awful lot of credit for, and I think when he started missing time at the end, and obviously the team changed dramatically at the end, he was a huge part of why the penalty kill was top 10 for the better part of this season. And I know it really went off the rails at the end, but Bogosian's presence, I can't tell you, Marty, and you and I always have this running joke about copying each other's notes in the course of a game, the number of times that it was Bogosian who was making the effective 200-foot clear to relieve the pressure on the penalty kill. It was, without fail, almost always him getting the puck and making the successful clear. And that should never be undervalued because it's the most critical aspect of getting it out of your zone and relieving pressure. And Bogosian was very good at it.
With Bogosian, though, a lot of fans are going to say, well, he played his last game March 23rd. Why on April 23rd are we hearing a month later that he's gotten hip surgery? And my only answer to that, without knowing the real answer, is that they probably were trying to avoid surgery at all costs. So you are studying, you're trying to rehab it, you're trying to see the options and try not to have your player that has had hip surgery before go through another surgery again. So that's probably why it's taken a month. People would say, well, if they would have had the surgery April 1st, he may have been ready September 1st or October 1st.
It's not uncommon, but those criticisms are coming from, you know, someone that or areas that might not just understand the process of maybe trying to work through, not work through an injury in rehab, but just figure out the best course of action for the player. Yeah. And I think that's what you try to, that's what you have to try to figure out. You have to explore all avenues. And sometimes it's up to the player, too, to say, you know what, maybe I'll wait and see. It might not feel too bad. I'll give it a couple of weeks. I'll come back. I'll try it. If we, you know, if it hurts, look, then
let's,
we'll.
Let's be real. He came off
surgery. Yeah, let's be real.
Let's be real.
No, I mean, you think about what this was not just shutting it down in March.
Yeah.
The number of times that Bogosian did not practice, maintenance day. This was a challenging
season.
It was a challenging year as it went along to try to give as many games as he could to this team.
Yep.
And you guys have lived it as athletes. Some injuries do take a little bit more time after the fact to assess and choose the best course of action, especially when you're dealing with someone who's had this, again, kind of chronic core issue. And so how does one surgery tie in with the last surgery, right? I mean, these are, and again, it's a critical time, again, for Zach in his career. Yep. They have to get this right to give him the best chance moving forward.
It sucks for Zach. And, you know, I think if you're a player on his team, you know, you sit there and you think, you know how much he loves to come to the rink every day. You know how much he loves to play the game. Not only that, but he was playing well. And I think, and it was the first time in a long time that, and you guys touched on it, that he's
able to. Who did he play well with, too?
Jake?
A number of guys, but Darlene.
He played with everybody, Darlene, too. Didn't he?
Yeah. Well, the coach certainly liked him with Darlene, right? I mean, we heard that.
Who knows what that's going to be next year, or what that would have been next year. But I think that Darlene and Bogosian were playing well together. Mm-hmm. And so there's an option maybe that is not going to be there at the start of the season for Darlene to have as a partner. So you're looking at who are the right-handed defensemen that could play with Rasmus Darlene next year. Mm-hmm. That is something that they'll have to figure out over the summer.
Well, not to throw gasoline on the fire, but I mean, one guy that immediately...
Pecorine. No? Okay, I'm not in the same...
I don't know which way he shoots.
He shoots both ways.
I would say this, immediately upon Darlene's arrival last year and in his first development camp, Will Borgen was put with him.
Yeah.
And I know this is an enormous stretch, but if the Amherst can figure things out here, and even if they don't, but Will has had a very good year, and if he continues to progress. And I'll say this, PD, you haven't seen the two games so far for Rotch, and I realize the results have not been what they want, but Borgen still looks like everything you want him to look like from a physical standpoint, from a standing up for, you know, every little thing I see in Borgen right now is what you want. And those are the reasons why I would jump to that Dahlin pairing right away, because why not? First of all, if these are going to be two of your, you know, stable, significant presences on the blue line moving forward. And I do think there's a little bit of an immediate chemistry between the two. The two
all
really like each other.
In favor of Billy Borgen, say aye. Aye. I'd love to see Will Borgen up here. I mean, just the style of play that he's in. I haven't seen a lot of the Amerks last few games, but what he showed when he was here, and, you know, Craig will attest to it. I mean, probably a better guy to ask, in my opinion, than me. But everything, all the intangibles that you want and need for that you know, sidekick to a guy like Dahlin or even a lower pair guy in your lineup. So we got to get to break. It's a fun day, actually. It's one of the national days, Marty. I'm gonna test you.
I just heard Kelly say it, and I forgot it.
Spoil everything around
I forgot
here. It's like
it.
Everyone has a source, and the information.
I heard her saying
it. To be outed.
I heard her saying it, but now I forgot. I'm clearly.
I'm not plugged in. I haven't heard a darn thing. So.
She didn't then you're not listening to the conversation that happened.
She was
here
talking like
five. She came
in
and handed the update, and she said it right here, and you were sitting right there.
I was getting a tissue from Marty, you may recall.
Figure out what national day it is when we come back. Sports update. Hour number two of the Instigators right here. Instigators, as I just said, WGR 550 and MSG.
Instigators?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.